Dev with Crime Hive, and this is another true crime story of how they were caught. Now, this story takes place in Longmont, Colorado, back in 1993, and it would have an interesting ending because it's not what you think, and you'll learn more as we go deeper into this case. But it starts out on May 1st, 1993, where a woman named Tammy Tatum would be found dead by her husband, Jim Meadow. And Jim, just to give you some backstory, Jim had some drinking issues. He had some DUI arrests, and he was even arrested for domestic violence with Tammy Tatum. And he was sentenced to a treatment center for 6 months. And the arrangement was Tammy would take him to work and he would stay at this treatment center, but he would be able to walk to him, or Tammy would give him rides, and they still had an ongoing relationship. But one morning, Tammy didn't show up to pick him up. And so Jim went back over to the house from the treatment center and would find Tammy cold and blue and obviously deceased. Her arms were above her head, which seemed odd. It seemed staged to police when they would later come on scene. Jim had called 911, and they had a baby who was unharmed. He had a very young baby. According to Jim, he heard the baby crying, which is why he forced his way into their place and found his wife dead.
Crime High. True crime buzz.
Now, when police would come out, they determined Tammy was strangled, and they believed the crime was sex motivated because she had injuries around her breast and her vagina. But there was no sex assault in this particular case. They did find other evidence as they searched around. One item was a towel that was nearby that they determined was used to clean up Tammy and the rest of the area to prevent evidence. So they believed this person was trying to prevent evidence, but they also believed the person did not have an understanding of DNA, because they believed that though Tammy was cleaned, most likely with water, she still had DNA under her fingernails. There were some skin and blood cells that gave investigators a partial profile. But back in 1993, DNA was still not very advanced. And so they couldn't really do a whole lot with that DNA at the time. They did locate some hairs on the bed. And one of those hairs would actually have the hair bulb, which is basically the root of the hair, which would indicate that it was forced out of someone's head. So force was used to remove that hair, and they would collect that, but they still didn't really have a whole lot to do with the samples at that time. They did find a condom in the trash that would come back to match Jim, and he had told police that he had a consensual encounter with Tammy the night before she was found. So early on, police would have Jim in their crosshairs as a suspect. And he didn't have a strong alibi because the treatment center was only about a 15-minute walk to the house. And he admitted to being at the scene the night before and then leaving back to the treatment center, which he checked back in at about 9:43 p.m. And police determined that the crime most likely occurred between 9 p.m. and 9 a.m. So he fit that window of time since he had signed in at 9:43 p.m. And he wasn't really ruled out, but they just didn't quite have enough to arrest him. Although one detective would later say that they could have made an arrest on Jim, but they wouldn't have been able to convict him. So the case stalled for a little while. A couple other things. When they interviewed witnesses, people explained that they saw Tammy with a black eye as early as 30 days before her homicide, and that she had told multiple people she was planning on leaving Jim and that she was scared of him and didn't want to be with him anymore. Witnesses even told police from the treatment center that he had mentioned something to the effect of he could just kill and strangle her. Police noted those witness statements, and they also found some letters from Tammy about the violence and how scared she was from Jim. They still didn't have enough. And so 3 years later, there would be a similarity because another crime would take place, and it would be in the same city in Longmont, Colorado. A 911 call would be made regarding a man raping and blindfolding this woman while the assault took place. Apparently, the man used duct tape and placed a knife to the face of Renee Delaney, and she had woken up. She was asleep. Someone had broken into her home, told her not to open her eyes or they would cut her, and to not make any noises. When he finished the assault, Renee recounted that he poured water all over her body and was attempting to clean up possible evidence. He would use a towel to wipe her down and also wipe down the surrounding areas. This was very similar to the other case with Tammy, when detectives noted the towel that was used to clean up. So very similar case, although this woman did survive her attack. When police would go out, they noticed he took everything with him. The tape he used to cover her eyes, the knife, and other items that he brought with him were taken. So he's clearly made an effort, again, to try to prevent evidence, but still did not have an understanding of DNA, and DNA was collected from Renee. Now, the samples from Renee and Tammy, the DNA evidence that was collected, would be the same. And so they would be looking for someone in particular that is linked to both scenes. The problem was it would take 10 more years before police would get a break with DNA, because DNA would advance and they would get some new leads. So let's fast forward 10 years after those two cases. So 10 years later, police would get a hit from their database, CODIS, which collects DNA samples from people arrested for felony crimes. And so they're in this criminal database. And in CODIS, a hit would be given with the name Rudy Gaetan. And he was a 40-year-old mechanic, and he happened to live in the same complex as Renee. Now, the reason this DNA just came to light was apparently Gaetan had been in a serious car accident. He was arrested for writing fake prescriptions because he had been addicted to pain pills. And he was arrested for a felony charge. And because of that felony charge, police were able to collect his DNA. And then that DNA was submitted to the CODIS database, which then linked this man, Rudy, to both crime scenes. They talked to Rudy Gaetan, and they would learn through their investigation that Gaetan was in the same treatment center as Jim Meadow, who was still a suspect in Tammy's case. Furthermore, Gaetan was the witness that had mentioned Tammy having a black eye, and it appeared he was trying to stray detectives away from him as a possible suspect. He was friends with Jim Meadow and Tammy, so he knew them, and police would start to connect the dots as the one hair with the hair bulb that was intact came back to match Rudy Gaytan. The DNA would match from the towel used to wipe up the body. That would come back to Rudy. Jim Meadow would be cleared. So for years, police believed Jim Meadow was most likely responsible for Tammy's death and possibly this other assault with Renee. But he was ultimately cleared because of the DNA evidence and how it had evolved. So Gaytan would ultimately admit to this crime, and he would tell police that he had waited for Jim Meadow the night of the murder to leave his house. And so he had apparently staked it out and planned this crime. As soon as Jim Meadow left, he would then enter the home and attack Tammy. DNA evidence would be left under Tammy's nails, as I mentioned, and the hairs would be collected and the DNA from the towel that would all be linked to Rudy. Along with the DNA evidence from Renee's body, from her sex assault kit that was taken, that DNA would connect back to Rudy. Rudy had time with Tammy because he knew that Jim would not come back because he was at the treatment center. So he had time to clean up, and it appeared that the person responsible for that crime was comfortable being there. And the attack was personal because we're talking about strangulation. Rudy would ultimately serve 72 years for both crimes, and he would not be eligible for parole until he was 103 years old. So again, the power of DNA evidence convicted this man. But another important note I want to mention is, if DNA evidence never got to where it did, we could have been potentially looking at a case of Jim Meadow, the husband, being wrongly convicted. Now, police in this case didn't arrest him because they knew they wouldn't be able to get a conviction, but they did say they had enough evidence to arrest him. So thinking about that, in all the cases where people have been arrested wrongfully and DNA evidence has been able to save them and exonerate them from charges. So it is interesting the way things have evolved with DNA, and it will continue to evolve even more for not just convictions, but for exonerations. And we just hope that people are not wrongfully convicted, of course, and that police are getting the right person. And in this case, it was a shock to police since they had interviewed this witness at the treatment center and just weren't able to connect the dots until DNA had caught up. So that is the end of this story. I hope you enjoyed this true crime story of how this man was caught. And I will be back again next week for another episode. You all take care.
Crime Hive. True Crime Buzz.